What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program, episode 405 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. Great to be back with you folks this week. Although I think, in terms of Boston sports, may not be the best day to be coming out with an episode. I think, given the state of a couple of local teams at the moment, but I think, we keep on keeping on at this point, and we don't always get to choose when our teams do well or do poorly. So I think it's going to be probably a difficult episode today, but it's sports. That's why we love it so much. It can be unpredictable. It can not go the way that we think, and sometimes that's great. Sometimes it's not so great, but I think it's kind of how it goes sometimes. So I think that's we're gonna get into obviously talking a lot of Celtics today, a lot of Red Sox as well. Just some I think unfortunate situations with both teams, that we'll get to with Celtics in the playoffs and down 3 games to 1 at this point, and the Red Sox with all the stuff going on with Devers and ownership having to get involved. So just like a lot of things going on that are not great, but we'll also have some other good positive things on today's show as well. I got some Revolution to get to as they continue their point streak, as they got a point on the road this weekend, so we'll obviously get into that. There's some Patriots stuff with rookie minicamp that went on this weekend. Couple of Bruins things that I wanted to get to as well. And then obviously playoff updates in the NBA and the NHL. But I think, and also we'll have a top five later in the program as well. So that's also something that we have to look forward to. But I think, starting off with just talking about where we are in terms of Boston sports, I figure it makes the most sense to talk Celtics and talk about Game 4 last night. And there's no latest on Jason Tatum. Obviously talk about that. I don't anticipate that, at the time of this recording, I don't know if we'll hear about any results. Jason was going to have an MRI, I think, after the injury that he suffered late in the fourth quarter last night. Obviously, we don't want to speculate, but I think it does seem that, given his reaction, somewhat of a serious injury. So, obviously, since we last recorded, a lot has happened. The Celtics have played 4 games against the Knicks and are currently down 3 games to 1. And I think that not a lot of people, I think including Knicks fans, would have ever imagined that this series would be, 3 to 1 Knicks. And, how we got here was how we got here. I don't think anybody expected those 4 games to go the way that they did. And I think, unfortunately, the Celtics just are not in a good position, clearly. So I think, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about games 1 and 2 because I think it's important to, in the context of where the Celtics are. But I think, not going to spend too much time on those games, but I think it is, bothersome that the Celtics were not able to finish off either one of those 2 games, despite having a 20-point lead in the second half of both of those games. I think, unfortunately, with the way that those games unfolded offensively, the Celtics, were unable to make a lot of shots in both of those games, unable to score a lot of points and shoot at a high percentage. A shot their 2 lowest field goal percentages in both of those games. But I really thought that, for the most part, defensively, did about as much as they should have against the Knicks, but they just weren't able to, execute in late game situations. And, I think, unfortunately, you look at the way the Knicks played in that first round series against the Pistons, they had a lot of those games that kind of went down to the wire. And we know how good Brunson can be in those late game situations. Bridges obviously came up huge at the end of both of those first two games in Boston. And it just seemed like the Knicks were used to playing those types of games and the Celtics weren't. You know, it just seemed like the Celtics didn't have as much experience in those types of games, and the Knicks kind of, you know, thrived in those situations. And, you know, I think for the most part, you look at the Celtics and their poor shooting in those first two games, a lot of those looks they got, especially late in games, you know, they're shots that they usually make. And I think I don't want to make it so simple, but it did seem like those games that they lost really could have swayed another way if they make a shot or two at a key point. You know, if they don't turn the ball over at a key moment, if there's not some mental mistakes or whatever, you know, and I feel like a couple bounces go the other way, the Celtics easily win both of those games. And I think clearly you should be able to win two games when you're up by 20 points, and there's really no excuse to not be able to close out those games. And just not being able to make the right reads, the right plays at the end. And I think it cost them. You know, game three, I think, is more like what a lot of people expected from this series, that the Celtics were going to just throttle the Knicks with their 3-point shooting. And honestly, like, it was pretty much how it should look. That game three was kind of what I think a lot of people expected. In game four, I think unfortunately, it was just kind of a matter of time before the Knicks started to play better offensively. You know, those first three games in the series, Celtics, I think, did a pretty decent job defensively on a number of Knicks players. You know, really, I think other than the fourth quarter of game two, you know, up until last night's game, Bridges kind of had been pedestrian. And, you know, Brunson, I think the Celtics had done a good job of holding him at bay, you know, Towns as well. But it just seemed like last night the dam kind of finally broke, and the Knicks had, you know, four guys, including those three, in the 20s in terms of points. And it just seemed like they couldn't miss in the second half. You know, Celtics up 11 at the end of the first half, up by 14 in the third quarter. And it just seemed like the Knicks just kept coming and coming offensively. And the Celtics just defensively and on the offense and on the defensive glass just didn't have an answer for Mitchell Robinson and didn't have an answer for Brunson and Bridges, who just couldn't miss in the second half last night. And it just stinks that it kind of was just a matter of time before the Knicks have a good offensive game. And it's just unfortunate that it had to come with the Celtics down 2 games to 1 in the series, and not, you know, with the Celtics up 2 games to 1 or up 3 games to nothing, so that a game like that doesn't feel so deflating, you know. And honestly, I wasn't a person that thought that the Celtics would throttle the Knicks in this series. I figured that this series was going to be hard and was going to be 5 or 6 games, you know. So I think in my mind, I figure that this series could easily be 2-2 right now, or 3-1 Celtics, but obviously it's not that way. And, you know, just seems like for the most part this series, the Knicks have just been better. They have played better. You know, I think that simply they've just competed better and harder and a little more intensity. And I think just more focus, you know. And I think that nothing is more obvious when a team is consistently getting offensive rebounds, I think consistently, you know, forcing turnovers and making the plays at the key moments and making shots. It's kind of like all the things you expect the Celtics to do. And the Knicks just seem like they are making the right plays majority of this series. And I know that it may not feel like that because the Celtics 3 games in a row went up by 20 points, but it's like kind of doesn't matter. Like, if you're not, you know, executing at those key moments, you know, it really doesn't matter if you are the, you know, quote unquote superior team, which I believe the Celtics are. And I think a lot of people would probably agree with that sentiment, but that doesn't necessarily mean that like that's the way a series is going to go. You still have to go out and play and go out and compete, and it just seems like it's just not where it needs to be, the execution, not where it needs to be. There are a number of guys that, in my opinion, I don't think are right, health-wise, but that's no excuse. It's the playoffs, everybody's dealing with things, and it just seems like the Celtics are just a step behind. And it's unfortunate because I think, we all expect this team to, be in contention to win another title, get back to the conference finals at least. And now, they're staring down the barrel of going out in the second round in 5 games. Now, obviously, the injury to Tatum makes this a lot worse and makes this, I think, seemingly unlikely that the Celtics will be able to come back in this series. Could they win a game 5 tomorrow night? I think it's possible. Could they force a game 7? I think it's possible. But I think at the end of the day, like this team winning 3 in a row, I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's likely. It is possible. I mean, nothing is impossible, but I do think that obviously with Jason's injury, it makes it a lot more difficult. Now, I'm assuming that he will not be available for the rest of the series and rest of the playoffs, but I don't want to sit here and speculate. But I think this team has to assume that he's not going to be available for the foreseeable future. And I think they kind of need to get used to that. And, it's tough because you don't want to see a teammate and a brother and a friend go down like that. But this series is still going on. Sure, you're down 3 games to 1, but it's like there's still games to be played. And you can't feel too upset about it because you still have to go play. It's not like last night was an elimination game and you lost and your season's over. There's still games to play, and I think we still should expect this team to come out and play their hardest and give it their best shot to give the Knicks a run for their money and hopefully maybe win a game or two. We can see what Jaylen Brown, is made of, what Derek White is made of, what the rest of the team, Porzingis. And I think you kind of just have to hope that something like this can galvanize the team instead of, bring them down. And I get that it's hard, but I think you got to be able to kind of bounce back up. And here's the other thing, and obviously I don't want to speculate, but if that injury to Jason is as bad as we think, and it's a serious enough injury that he needs to miss a lot of next season or all of next season, this team's going to have to get used to playing without him. And so I feel like that kind of needs to be the attitude of like, okay, we're still alive in this series. We're going to need to get used to playing without him, presumably, if this injury is as bad as we think. Then it's like kind of up to Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Drew Holiday, Porzingis. I mean, not sure who's going to be on the team next season. I do think there's a good chance that there's some significant change to this roster, but it's like they're going to have to get used to playing without him, and I think that's just how it's going to be. Now, I think a couple of those guys are not 100%. Jaylen Brown, we kind of talked about at the beginning of the playoffs with his knee. Porzingis, unfortunately, I think with the illness that he's had, has made him just kind of look like an ordinary player. And I think, unfortunately, like the best way to get him right is to play him. But unfortunately, when he's playing, it's just not that level of effectiveness that you expect. I thought he was good defensively in game 3. Number of block shots and, was enough of a deterrent, but just doesn't seem like the offensive game is where it needs to be. And it kind of almost seems like it was hurting the team last night more than he was helping. But it's like, I don't know where else the Celtics look on the bench in terms of somebody that can give you what Porzingis gives you. Sure, they have Keita. Sure, they have Xavier Tillman. But it's like those guys are not experienced in the postseason. And, I just think bringing them off the bench and expecting them to do anything is kind of a lot to ask. Cornette, they also bring off the bench too. But it's like he's not a guy that's going to be able to play, the same way that Porzingis does. So it's just, I do think that this team was kind of, or is kind of limited a little bit in terms of the injuries or things that guys are battling through. But make no mistake, that's no excuse. I don't want to make it seem like, oh, this team, is compromised in any way. It's like the team is what they are, and I think the spot that they're in is the spot that they're in. But it's difficult because I think we all expected this series to be going differently, and it's just not. And I think it'd be easy to sit here and say, oh, they could be doing this differently. They could be doing this differently. They could be doing this. But I almost feel like there's not really a whole lot to break down other than they're just getting outplayed, out hustled, out executed. And it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of positives going for them right now. And especially with Jason going down, it's like hard to feel any kind of positivity. But I think for this team, it's the fact that they are still alive, there are still games to play, and you better believe that they're still going to be, motivated to go out there and extend the series tomorrow night. And I expect them to. I expect them to play their hardest and try to extend the series. But, I don't know. I don't know how much of this emotional toll of losing Jason, seeing him writhing in pain on the ground, on the floor last night, can this team be able to use that as a galvanizing moment, or do they let this just bring them all down? And it would be a shame if it did. I think, disappointed, like a lot of us would be, if they just kind of laid down and laid an egg in game five. I would hope that that's not what they do, and would hope that Joe Mazzulla and that coaching staff can get them motivated to say, hey, this is some serious adversity. What are you made of? And I think, look, I'm not going to sit here and say I expect the Celtics to win three in a row and go back to the conference finals, go on a crazy run to win the championship. I don't expect that. I don't think anybody does or should, with Jason Tatum being the player that he is and how he just, makes this team go. But there is definitely something to be said for playing with pride here and not letting a serious injury to your best player, affect the way that you're going to go out and compete. You may not have the ability, talent-wise, to overcome this deficit and overcome this Knicks team that I think deserves a heck of a lot of credit for playing the way that they have in the late game situations in games one and two, and in the second half last night with the shot making and the physical level of defense that I think they've played with. And I think that team deserves a lot of credit. I think that a lot of us, including myself, kind of took them lightly, and I think, they deserve credit. They really do. And I think, this is hopefully kind of a lesson for some of these guys on this team. And, I know that this team could look different as early as next season, but, hey, it's just kind of the way that things go. Things are not always going to be the, or not going to go the way that you think and go the way that maybe you feel like they deserve to go, if that makes sense. But I think, yeah, you kind of just tip your cap to the Knicks and say, hey, you guys are playing better than us. And I think, it'd be interesting to see what happens game five. I think for this team, it's, staying true to yourself, not trying to do too much, not trying to say, okay, Jason's not going to be with us, we have to do, more of whatever. I think the idea still is playing within yourself and not trying to do too much and not focusing on the fact that somebody's not available. It's just, what they have to go do. I am interested. Jason's going to be out. Sam Hauser missed another game last night. What does that do to your depth on the wing? Do we see Torrey Craig at some point? Baylor Shireman possibly. I do think that Jaylen Brown certainly will get some more looks, I think, as kind of the main scorer. I'm curious about Porzingis. It's kind of too bad that it just doesn't seem like he's been himself really ever since coming back from that illness. He just doesn't look right. So it's just, you kind of hope that he can get into a rhythm playing more. That's really, in my opinion, that's really the only way that he's going to improve is by more playing time. Like, you're not going to be doing much by just sitting him on the bench because he's playing poorly. Like, I don't think that's not really something that I feel like you can do. And so I think you kind of just try to, trust in, your process and what you do well, and not focus on, who may or may not be available, because that's kind of just how it's going right now. So I think, sorry for the dog in the background. I think we're going to probably move on to the Red Sox now. I think Celtics game five against the Knicks back at the Garden tomorrow night at 7. So we'll see if the Celtics can extend the series. So yeah, we're gonna move on. Talk some Red Sox. I think obviously the podcast comes at an interesting time for the Red Sox, as they just came off a somewhat, I thought, a successful weekend in Kansas City, but they come back to Detroit to play a Tigers team that's playing some really good baseball. And Tanner Houck had one of the worst outings of his career, and it seems like that's been kind of a common occurrence for him this season, as he dropped to 0-3 on the season, and really just has not looked the same since the All-Star break last season, and in which, unfortunately made the All-Star team, and just hasn't really pitched like an All-Star since. And I think the Red Sox had, I thought, built some decent momentum, winning 2 out of 3 against Texas, with some good pitching performances, and then winning 2 out of 3 against Kansas City, the hottest team in baseball, with the only loss, a loss in 12 innings. And the Red Sox got some great pitching from Garrett Crochet, from Lucas Giolito, Saturday and Sunday. And so they're able to, take that series in Kansas City. And then Houck goes out and gives up 9 runs in the third inning last night. Red Sox lose 14-2, and kind of just sap a lot of that positive energy. And it just seems like, again, we kind of talked about last week, like, this is a team that doesn't seem like they can establish a lot of positive momentum, and they're kind of struggling playing, 500 baseball, and not really making any kind of headway, which I think also, as we've talked about, seems to be okay, as the division lead is not really widening. But you would like this team to start making some moves in the standings, and it just seems like they're kind of just treading water, at this point, at 22 and 21, 43 games into the season. We're dangerously close to approaching the, the first third of the season, and they've not really established themselves as a contender in the American League. And I don't know, I think a lot of people, including myself, kind of expected them to be. And there's a lot of issues that are kind of alarmingly the same as they were last season. I think with the defense, the inability in certain games to hit with runners in scoring position. I mean, I think offensively they've been better, but I think, obviously the bullpen has let them down. And just not being able to establish the consistent momentum of, like, winning series. And sure, obviously, this is just the first game of a series, but it's like you lose 14-2. It doesn't make you feel too good about yourself. And I think to make matters worse about this team, I think at this point underperforming, you have this whole situation with Devers and the refusal to play first base. And I think that this is a situation where I wouldn't say that one person is like the most is like there's not one person that's the only person to blame. I think there are multiple parties that share kind of some of this blame in terms of where the situation is. Now, obviously, Costas going down with the serious patellar tendon injury that will cost him the rest of the season. Think it just has made this situation just, more difficult than it needed to be, unfortunately. And, obviously, we wish Tristan a speedy recovery, but, I think at this point, as we talked about last week, it doesn't seem like this team really did the best job in terms of having depth at first base in the organization. And kind of talked about this last week that it kind of almost seems unbelievable that there wasn't a more of enough of kind of a thought to this where, Casas missed the majority of last season with an injury, and you would think that maybe there would be a little bit more of a concerted effort to, make sure that there's a decent backup plan, not necessarily having like a backup first baseman, but you probably should. Having Abraham Toro playing first base when he's played 15 games at first, Nick Sogard playing first. And there's no disrespect to them, but it's like, how is there not somebody else in the organization that has like a good amount of experience there? They signed Yasmani Grandal a couple weeks ago. He can play first base, but it's just, I don't know. It seems interesting that on the roster, there's not somebody else that like can play first base and has, significant experience. Romy Gonzalez is playing there, but then he gets hurt. And it's kind of like, it's turned into a whole mess that I feel like could have been avoided if the Red Sox had, had this roster built a little bit better to be able to withstand, a serious injury. Now, serious injuries happen. You don't, always think that like a serious season-ending injury is going to happen. Obviously, you don't prepare for that, but it's like you would think they'd be a little bit better prepared. And so I think that's where the frustration with the organization is in terms of the roster construction, that you kind of feel like they should have been able to get out in front of this. And I think in terms of the Devers stuff in particular, this is an organization that, broached Devers on this idea of switching positions at the start of spring training, which to me is idiotic. Like, if you knew that you were going to go out and try to, acquire a third baseman like Bregman, which you did, or Arenado, and it's like, how do you not have this conversation with Devers earlier in the offseason to be like, hey, we're going to go look to find somebody like this and have that conversation about him being the DH, have that conversation in the offseason so that, come into spring training and create this whole, fiasco of him like not wanting to move off third, which it's like we talked about it at the time. I get it to his point that, he's a proud guy and didn't want to move off that position, and I kind of didn't have a problem with it, but it's like I don't know why that conversation didn't happen much earlier in the off season. And why wasn't there a discussion about the first base thing too, where it's like, why approach him, in the middle of the season about moving position again? And it just seems like it's a situation that the front office and could have avoided, where it's like, have that conversation about moving positions, get that in his head so that it's not like a crazy thing to start spring training and be like, oh, by the way, we want you to try a new position. And I just feel like what they should have done is talk to him in the off season. They come to spring training and say, hey, what do you think about taking some grounders at first? Trying to see what you can do, because most guys that DH also play first base. It's kind of just like a natural thing that happens. And I don't know. I just don't really understand why that wasn't, more of a, it just seemed like a thing that should have happened. And I don't know, maybe there's a communication issue with, Devers and Cora and Breslow. I'm not really sure. But it just seems insane that we had to get the owner to get involved, where it's just like, how is this not figured out? I also, though, will say, like, there's a lot of that is on the front office, but there's some that's on Devers too. I feel like there's an element to this of you would think that he would want to be like, oh, well, let me do what's best for the team, and I'll kind of do whatever is best for the team. And I get the not wanting to move off a position or, switch to something new after kind of starting a new role. I get that, but it's just, I feel like he could help them out a little bit more in terms of not being, I feel like he's being a little bit stubborn, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm railing on him or anything, but I feel like there should be more of a, he should be taking more of kind of a leadership role. I know that maybe that's not who he is as a player in person, that's fine, but it's kind of just like you're the highest paid player on the team. And I feel like, I don't know, seems like there's a little bit of blame that could be attributed to both sides. And I feel like, could he be a little bit more open? I think so. But it's like, it's just unfortunate that the situation kind of got out of hand and it's now where it is. And there doesn't really seem like there's much of a solution, where it's just like, I don't know if they're just going to keep it as it is, wait for Romy Gonzalez to come back and keep Toro playing at first base, or Sogard, is that just going to be what they're going to do the rest of the season and have like a platoon? Do they try to make a trade? I would think that it's probably possible that they do one of those two things. Is it possible that they could get one of the younger prospects to learn first? I guess it's possible. Or Devers does decide to go over to first, but that doesn't seem like that's happening. It's not affecting his bat, which is good. It seems like he's really in a groove offensively, which is a positive. But it's just, I don't know. It just seems like another situation that the team could have gotten out in front of, and instead having to deal with this, and the team is still, really not where it needs to be. I think if this team is playing far better, then this would kind of just be a non-story. But I think that team struggles is kind of part of this, that you'd like to see them, starting to play better. I do think that starting pitching, it kind of started to look up a little bit better in the last couple, in the last week. Obviously before last night when Houck gave up the 11 runs. But I think, for this team, it's just trying to find that groove again offensively, and be able to have the pitching and the hitting kind of work together well, so that you can have confidence in any type of games. I think offensively, as I said, Devers has really started to pick it up lately. Now is up to 285 with 7 home runs, tied for the team lead with 31 RBIs. Bregman continues to have a great start. Willy Abreu has been excellent offensively. I've been really impressed with Carlos Narvaez. I think he's had a good start to the season, both offensively and defensively. Story's leveled off a little bit. Jarren Duran as well. I don't think that he's been playing great this season. I think you probably could expect a little bit more. But Garrett Crochet has been excellent. I think he's been one of the best pitchers in the American League. It's always really exciting to see him pitch. So he seems to be, totally and completely in control. Really liked, Bayo. I wasn't super impressed with his last start, but he does pitch tonight. And I think for the most part, it's been pretty solid. They've gotten some good outings from Hunter Dobbins, who I think has pitched really, really well, but they were unable to do anything with his solid start in Kansas City on Friday night. But I think good that they were able to win a couple in Kansas City against a really hot baseball team that I think had the best record in the majors. And the Red Sox, take two out of three. But then again, lose a game last night where just kind of they were embarrassed. So the Red Sox will throw Bayo tonight, 6:40 start in Detroit. Hunter Dobbins will go tomorrow night at 6:40, and then the Red Sox will open a three-game series against the Atlanta Braves starting Friday at Fenway. Garrett Crochet scheduled to start against Chris Sale on Friday, so that will be somewhat of an interesting pitching matchup. But I do think that this is just a team that I think is, unfortunately, I think at a certain point, making things more difficult than they need to be. And it just seems like the play on the field has been really uneven, and they really just doesn't seem like they've hit their stride yet. But I think here's hoping that, hopefully that loss last night is nothing more than a blip, and the Red Sox can continue to kind of build on the winning series and that sort of thing. But Detroit obviously is a very strong record, one of the best teams in the majors at this point. So the Red Sox will see if they can even the series tonight and then take the series on Wednesday before the three-game series against the Braves. Red Sox will have a long homestand following this Detroit trip. You'll have 10 in a row at Fenway against the Braves, the Mets, and the Baltimore Orioles. So hopefully can get something cooking with a 10-game homestand that will take the Red Sox to Memorial Day weekend. So I think that will likely do it for the Red Sox. We're going to get briefly to the Revolution, who scored a road point over the weekend against Orlando City. Revs had also won their round of 32 match in the US Open Cup. So the next US Open Cup game will be next Tuesday against the Chicago Fire. But the Revs getting the 3-3 draw against Orlando over the weekend, coming back twice from a couple of deficits. So really impressed with that Revs road tie. I think that they played a really good game offensively, getting goals from three different guys, which was great. Alhassan Youssef, Matt Polster scoring their first goals of the season. Carlos Hill getting the penalty in the 85th minute. I thought that the Revs were really solid offensively in this game and did a great job of bouncing back from both of those deficits. And it seems like they are really starting to catch their groove offensively. It's not like they're scoring three goals every game, but I think being able to see a good offensive performance with a lot of shots on goal, a lot of shot attempts. They won the possession battle 52% or 53% to 47, three corner kicks. Ivicic was really good in this game, made a number of huge saves, kept the Revs even, or kept the Revs close before Carlos Hill tied the game. So I think just a really good, solid performance, and the Revs just continue to play really solid, which is great to see. I think that they are starting to kind of figure out some really positive things in terms of, getting goals from other places other than Carlos Hill. Obviously he's going to be involved in a lot of what they do offensively, but just great to see that they could get goals from other sources. And now have ran off five straight games without a loss in MLS, and then six straight if you want to include the US Open Cup game. But I think really impressed. I think defensively, sure, giving up three goals is not the best, but I did think that Ivicic played a really good game, and I think came up big when they needed him to, and then obviously kept Orlando at bay before the Revs were able to tie it in the 85th minute. So the Revs will face off against San Jose this weekend, 7:30 start at Gillette. Purserina and a couple of old Revs players will be making their way back to Gillette, so that'll be kind of interesting game to see. The Revs have been on the road for the majority of the last couple of weeks. Will continue to be that, but they will be at home Saturday night, 7:30, and then they'll be at home Tuesday next week for the US Open Cup game before they'll be back on the road for the rest of the month of May. So I think that's going to do it for the Revs. We're going to briefly get to some Patriots, briefly get to some Bruins. Patriots had a rookie minicamp over the weekend. I don't think there's a whole lot to report. I think the Patriots have signed 8 of the 11 draft picks, so they've yet to sign three guys, I think, including Travion Henderson. I'm not sure who the other two players are, but it's good to see Will Campbell and Mike Vrabel get involved. Rookie minicamp, there was a picture of the two of them going at it. That was going viral, so I thought that was really interesting to see. But I don't think really there was much to report. I do think, mentioning Henderson, I think, could definitely be a guy that kind of gets maybe a larger role than we think in the offense. I think curious about, Rhamondre Stevenson, and is he able to correct some of those fumbling issues that he had last season? I think that if he's not able to, Henderson could certainly be a guy that kind of has a larger role. So the only other tidbits was that Julian Edelman was inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame as a 2025 inductee, joining Bill Parcells in this year's class. Edelman won the fan vote over Adam Vinatieri and Logan Mankins, were selected as finalists. And Terrell Williams, Patriots defensive coordinator, was not present at rookie minicamp, I think, due to a health scare. So hopefully he's back in the fold at some point. But I think for the Patriots, it's kind of just get ready for the offseason workouts and then what we see in training camp. But I think there's definitely an energy, I think, around this team that I think a lot of people are expecting, somewhat of a quick turnaround for this team to be competitive. It's also worth noting that the NFL schedule will be released tomorrow at some point, so we'll get to see the Patriots schedule. So I'll probably take a look at that next week on the podcast. So I think we're going to get to the Bruins here. Not a whole lot to get to. A number of Bruins, though, are participating in the World Championships at the moment. Jeremy Swayman, Mason Lowry, Andrew Peak for Team USA, David Pastrnak, Jacob Lauko for Czech Republic. So a number of Bruins participating in the World Championships, which is kind of exciting. No real news on the Bruins coaching front. I think that there's some rumors going around that Rick Tocchet may be of interest to the Bruins. He had previously coached with the Canucks. Also, Mishka Donskov, who's an assistant with the Stars, is also rumored to be of interest to the Bruins, but he is currently still coaching, so not sure, where that's going to go. But I think for the Bruins, they're kind of looking for somebody with a little bit kind of a forward-thinking approach on offense. So kind of be curious to see who that's going to be. I think, of course, talking to Joe Sacco, talking to Jay Leach, is they're both in the organization. But I think, as a lot of us probably would agree, I think going outside the organization probably is what's going to be best for this team. But obviously, there's a lot of moving parts too with the roster as well. So, it'd be interesting to see who they hire. What kind of players does that new coach want to bring in? Because there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of draft capital, a lot of open spots on the Bruins roster that I think will be filled. So, be very interesting to see what happens in this off season. So I think that's going to do it for our quick Bruins moment. We're going to get to some playoff notes. Going to get to some NBA notes here. Before we get into the playoffs, the Dallas Mavericks winning the draft lottery last night, a 1.8% chance of winning the lottery, and they won it, which is kind of wild how that works, trading Luka and how they're going to get the number one pick, which is presumed to be Cooper Flagg. I think that'll be an interesting destination for him, that, joining a team with Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving, a team that, already I think is pretty locked into, in my opinion, I think being a playoff team next season. I think they make the playoffs if Kyrie doesn't get hurt, doesn't tear his ACL. So be interesting to see what happens with that team. So they win the draft lottery. The Timberwolves beating the Warriors last night to take a 3-1 series lead, 117-110. Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle both with 30-point games, and the Timberwolves playing great basketball this postseason as they had beaten the Lakers in five and look like they're well on their way to beating the Warriors as they're up 3-1. Steph Curry does not expect to play in game five for the Warriors as he had suffered a hamstring injury in I think that was in the first game of the series. And it's also being reported that Giannis Antetokounmpo is open to exploring the best fits outside of the Bucks. So he may possibly be on the move this offseason. Games on the NBA schedule tonight. Game five between the Pacers and the Cavs. The Cavaliers unsure about Donovan Mitchell's status for game five as the Warriors, excuse me. The Pacers are up 3-1 with the chance to advance to the conference finals for the second year in a row. They have been thoroughly dominant in this series against the Cavs. Really good in game four, and I think that, this team playing at the best ability they can, I wouldn't be surprised if they're a dark horse team for the finals. Not really sure about where Jason Tatum and the Celtics are at, but I do really like what the Pacers have going on. So we'll see if they can finish the series tonight, game five in Cleveland, game five in Oklahoma City, Thunder and the Nuggets at 9:30. So we'll see who gets the edge in game five. So we're going to get to some NHL notes here as both the Oilers and the Hurricanes won last night to go up 3-1 in their series. Edmonton up on Vegas and Carolina up on Washington. And we'll take a look at some notes here. The Kings are expected to name Ken Holland their new general manager, and the Oilers, Calvin Pickard, is expected to be out the rest of the series due to an injury. Stuart Skinner filled in last night with a shutout of the Golden Knights, in which he made 23 saves. So the other series, 2-1, Dallas leads over Winnipeg in the Western Conference Game 4 tonight at 8. And then Florida and Toronto, the other Eastern Conference series, tied at 2 apiece. Game 5 will be tomorrow night at 7. And then Edmonton and Vegas, Game 5. Tomorrow night at 7, Oilers have a chance to win the series. That Maple Leafs Panthers series is one heck of a series and is kind of tough to watch if you're a Bruins fan, as I don't think a lot of us particularly care for either one of those two teams, but sure has been entertaining and, just wild to see Brad Marchand in a different jersey, Brandon Carlo as well. But definitely an entertaining series if you like hockey. So definitely been, I think, one of the best series of the playoffs. So we'll get to some baseball notes. Evan Longoria is expected to sign a one-day contract with the Tampa Bay Rays and then retire with them. Paul Skenes has announced that he will pitch for Team USA in the 2026 World Baseball Classic. So we're going to take a look at the standings here in the American League. Yankees currently with a three-game lead over the Red Sox. They are 24 and 17. In the Central, you have Detroit leading at 27 and 15, two and a half games ahead of the Guardians and the Royals. The Mariners in first in the West at 22 and 18, a game and a half ahead of the Athletics. In the National League, the Mets in first, 27 and 15. In the East, two and a half game lead over the Phillies. The Cubs lead in the Central by a game over the Cardinals, and the Dodgers lead in the West, a game and a half ahead of the Padres. Dodgers with the best record on percentage points as they are 27 and 14. So as I mentioned briefly with the Patriots, the NFL schedule comes out tomorrow. There have been some games that have been reported that the first game of the season will be the Eagles against the Cowboys, September 4th, that Thursday night game. It's also being reported that the Chiefs will host the Broncos on Christmas night. Just some random games that get reported. And the international slate, I think, also was announced, as well as the Vikings will get internet or back-to-back international games, as they will play a game in Dublin, Ireland on September 28th, and then we'll play in England on October 5th. So back-to-back international games for the Vikings. The first international game of the season will be in Brazil on September 5th, as the Chargers will face a yet-to-be-announced opponent. So Vikings-Browns will be the matchup on October 5th in London, and Vikings-Steelers will be that matchup in Dublin, Ireland. Some other games that are also in London: Jacksonville or the Jets against the Broncos in London on October 12th, and then October 19th, the Jags will play the Rams, and then the NFL will also return to Germany November 9th when the Falcons will play the Colts, and then there is a game in Spain this season as the Commanders will play the Dolphins in Madrid. So all kinds of international games on the NFL schedule. Kind of crazy that that's where we are now. I used to remember the one game that they had every year, but now it's like they're all over the place. So it'd be interesting to see what goes on, but I feel like that's kind of crazy with the Vikings, two games in a row that they'll be abroad. So be interesting to see how that shakes out for them. See how they do this season working around that trip. So I think that's going to do it for the sports this week. Got a new top five. I was out at a cookout on Sunday for Mother's Day, and kind of got me thinking about the summer months and how much fun they can be with, being outside with good food. So made me think of summer food. So yes, I know that it's a little early on this, but I think we're getting close to, Memorial Day, 4th of July, going to be outside enjoying all kinds of food. So I figured this was a good time to do my top five summer foods. Now, some of this is a little personal, but the other stuff is kind of, I think usually acceptable in terms of what you would typically eat in the summer. So I think, not going to rank them exactly, but I think giving you guys five, I think, is a good thing to do. So number one is watermelon. I think that's, a lot of people would agree that that's pretty agreed upon summer food. Really, really good. Love watermelon. Love a good slice of watermelon on a hot day. I think that, plays better than pretty much any food you could think of, on a hot summer day. A great cookout food that you can put on your plate. So I think that's definitely good, as I think most people would have watermelon in the summer, and not really sure that any of these foods I'm going to list, play as well in other parts of the year. Corn on the cob also is good. That's definitely a staple in the summer, especially around here. You can get it from all different kinds of places in the summer. So that's definitely a staple for sure, that most people I think would agree that you're having that in the summertime at cookouts and such. I will also say that s'mores are really good in the summer as well. Maybe not necessarily a cookout food, but definitely something that you're almost always having in the summer, campfire and such. I think that's pretty good staple there. And then here's where I get a little bit specific to me personally, but I will say lobster here, and I kind of mean the shell lobster that, you have a nice family gathering with. I think that that's a great food to have in the summer. Sure, you could say, oh yeah, you could have it, any old time, but I don't think it plays as well in other parts of the year. So lobster is definitely a thing, is that's definitely something me and my family enjoy every summer. And then I get very specific here. There's a ramen noodle salad that my mom makes that is absolutely out of this world, that we almost just will always have in the summertime. And that's one of my favorite things to eat. So that definitely needed to be on there. But I think you could include, a coleslaw pasta salad. Not really a big potato salad fan, but that could definitely be on, like an honorable mention. I think that you could put any kind of barbecue food on here as well, burgers, dogs, ribs, chicken, any of those things. So, those are probably some good honorable mentions, but those I think are my top five for sure, and all five things that I'm very much looking forward to eating this summer. So I think that's probably going to do it for me this week. As always, you can listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. You can toss a follow and a review on either one of those places. And you can also follow along on Twitter and Facebook for the latest social updates. And you can always feel free to shoot me a message on either one of those platforms if you have any things that you'd like me to touch on or whatnot. So, also, got a great guest Friday for you guys to look forward to later this week. Talking to him, WNBA as the season kicks off this week. So excited for that later this week. So we will talk to you Friday.